Hanging out at Stadium Swim, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Everything on Monday, Cofield and Company, Stadium Swim, you heard it. Getting ready for the national title game. Here is the mania under the sun. Closes out with a banger, UConn and Purdue. I actually think it ends one of the great men's college basketball seasons of recent times. Storylines all over the place, the NCAA tournament. Clearly, there were a lot of schools unhappy, and then they missing out on the field, but then they also voiced their displeasure by turning down the NIT, which I think is going to change postseason basketball in some form or fashion in the next 2 years. That's a great storyline. And the reason I say this, and we're going to get to the women here and the result, which we called, South Carolina was by far the best team in college basketball, maybe 8 points better than LSU, but beyond that, they were double digits better than everyone else. But we're getting a lot of this, hey, the women's game is now popular or more popular than the men. I don't think we're there yet. I don't know that we'll get there, but we'll get into that in about 20 minutes. So we've got UConn and Purdue on deck. First of all, are your eyes okay? Did you stare right into the eclipse?
I actually did. I was testing out the whole, like,
did you
can't do it thing. No,
well,
not really.
I mean, I looked Trump, in that direction. DJT's still alive.
He
made it. So he proved all this nonsense about not being able to look into an eclipse, completely phony.
Well, he did it for a couple seconds. I think it's, you know, there's a certain amount of time you can't do it for.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, I looked in that direction. We didn't really get the full effects of it. We got like 60%. But I went out there, checked it out.
You think the whole thing's overhyped?
I do to an extent, right? I mean, it's cool and it only happens every, you know, certain amount of years. It only happens in the exact locations that it happened today, every 360 years, if that, sometimes a little less. They happen very often, but just in different parts of the world. It's a cool thing, and I get all of that. But, like, the reactions that some people had of, first of all, the traveling all across the world to try to get to the right spot, and then the, you know, people overcome with tears. I don't know how much live coverage you were watching, but they were just showing people just tears streaming as they watched the eclipse. Like, okay, it's a natural occurrence that, you know, it happens. I don't get it. I don't understand that part of it. Again, I'm not even dismissing it as a thing. Like, it's cool. Like, if it was happening over Vegas, I absolutely would have went outside, like, participate, you know, gone, joined a group, whatever, hung out, watched it, for sure. But I don't understand the just overcome with emotion stuff. Like, from why? It happens.
I completely forgot it was happening. And I was just holed up. I was holed up in my office prepping the show, and I didn't have any TV on.
And no social media, apparently. It's all people were talking about. It was wild.
I look at social media sometimes. I look at it early, but then I also look at it later in the day. I had 75 stories in my email. That's how I prep for the show days ahead.
Sure.
Is that I see stuff that I like, so I send it to myself. So I was just going through that.
Yeah, and life went on. Like, it happened.
I had no idea. You know what's funny? I never even looked out the window to see if there was an effect.
There was. Oh, on you mean?
Yeah. Like around the house. I never looked outside.
I don't think we get the effect if you're not in the path of totality, which I'm so glad we're done with that expression for a while.
I don't even know what that is. The path of totality?
Yeah, there was a band across the U.S. that it traveled where you're completely blacked out.
Oh, okay.
And that's called the path of totality. If you look at, like, the...
Watch yourself, Adam.
Sorry.
We have the circ attack trying to get by tsunami.
If you look at the path of totality,
yes.
It was actually a business thing, too, where, like, all the Airbnbs, all the hotels were all full and, like, charging 6-7 times their rates.
No!
In the path of totality.
Really?
Because it does get completely dark.
Oh, wow.
In the middle of the day.
How long was it dark for?
Like, seconds.
People paid $700 or 7 times the normal hotel
rate?
Well,
you get like, partial darkness for, like, almost 2 hours in some spots,
okay,
whatever.
So it's
but
a slow build.
The full darkness is, you know, like, a minute less.
Excellent.
But, yeah, it happened. It's over. I don't think – I can guarantee you I wouldn't be emotional if I was in the path of totality.
Well, you're not an outdoors person. You're an overnight weather person.
I am.
An overnight news person.
I am. Any news event that's happening overnight is totally cool with me.
But you're very down on just outside. You don't like trees. You're very down on scenery.
See, that's a misnomer. I think we've mischaracterized that over the years.
On this show?
Trees are fine. Yes.
We've taken something we said on the air and then...
Yeah.
And then ridden it for years?
Trees are fine.
Okay.
People that are like, I'm going to go out in the forest and look at... soak in the trees and let them rejuvenate me. That's stupid. That's dumb. Doesn't make any sense. They're fine. Trees that... Like, I see some trees... See some trees here at Circa. They're cool. I don't dislike the fact that trees exist or they're, you know, I'm not questioning their existentialism. Like, they're here. They're around us. They're cool. And if you see them, that's fine. But just traveling to see a tree or, like, being amongst the trees or having some life-affirming powers and some realizations and you're, like, that's just stupid.
I don't hate trees like you do, but, I notice trees when I'm around something else. Like, I thought that the trees in the landscape around the Quick Trip in Phoenix were special. But there's also no Quick Trips here. We've talked about our convenience stores here.
Yeah, need I think to, Quick need, Trip in general
need
is
to
cool.
Need to step it up.
Yeah, Quick Trip in general is cool. You don't need a... There's some...
I appreciate trees, though. And also, you know what I appreciate? I appreciate landscaping around nice hotel properties.
Sure.
Like in Vegas. I think we're losing that sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
And the places in Phoenix that you were kind of sneaking around trying to listen in on coaches, there were some nice work and landscaping around
was
those
there?
As well.
I didn't notice.
Exactly. Well, because you were hyper-focused on trying to see what this Mountain West coach or that one was saying.
Yeah, true. And, you know, joining conversations and be a part. Yeah, for sure. But I didn't notice that there was any landscaping in particular.
Okay.
They're decent hotels. Also, by the way, I am voting Phoenix out.
Yeah, we have so much stuff this week that I think I already have Tuesday and Wednesday show set. So the Arash list of walkable cities that you can eliminate Phoenix officially.
Yeah.
And we'll also mention later on, we talked to the mayor. It wasn't good. And that got me more down on Phoenix. But so these are my reasons why tonight, and you watch if you want, I would come down here to Circle Las Vegas and Stadium Swim. I think there are stories galore. One, we're talking about you win two in a row. That's a dynasty in college basketball on the men's side.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know, UConn of years past with Gino Auriemma where you just get a bunch of good players and then there's like eight teams that can compete with you. This is a balanced era. It's harder to keep your team together than it's ever been because of the transfer portal. We know big budget basketball still does really well. UConn is about to win two in a row. It's been done twice in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
So this is super special. So basically it's like, can someone beat this freaking team?
And you would say this is the most impressive of any of them.
I mean, they've won comfortably against everyone. I mean, that game on Saturday against Alabama, you're watching and they're like, they're within hailing distance at about eight with 4 minutes left. And then basically on two back-to-back timeouts and out of bounds plays, they just run something brilliant. I mean, I thought Caravan's three on a set play from like 25 was a stupid shot. He made it. So then it's like when they wanted to go, you know, room and step on the gas pedal, that's a terrible noise, but they did it. We've also got storyline number two. We've got the most dominant big man, and like you said last week, I don't know why people hate Zach Edey. We've got the most dominant big man since what? Shaq or Duncan, and those guys didn't win to the level.
Yeah.
And whether you think he's a good NBA player or not, in college basketball, winning back-to-back, we have what Andy Katz was talking about this on Friday, winning back-to-back player of the year in college basketball is nearly impossible.
It's crazy.
It's a group of like 15 guys, and they're all-time greats. We could be back to UConn. We could be looking at a future best college basketball coach, at least of this era, and maybe as a guy who can be a top 10 of all time in Dan Hurley. With what he's doing right now, he looks like a great coach. He's a super interesting character. That's a great storyline. On the matchup of the two bigs, we've got two good bigs in this. Two seven-footers. They've been basically eradicated from the game because now the new standard is, oh, they're 7 foot. Well, they need to be like Wemby. Can they shoot from 26? Can they defend all the way out? Klingon is really good. What do we got? Kling Kong? What's Edie's name? I don't know. Iron Eagle used some nickname for Zach Edey. Was it like Big Maple or something for Canada?
Something.
I think the other great storyline here is UConn fans are as arrogant and obnoxious as any fans in the country. They could find out in the next 7 days. Their coach says, see ya, going to Kentucky. This is awesome. And I haven't even, I could come up with 10 more storylines. This is a great view tonight.
Yeah.
And I think the dog can win.
Well, I hope not. But yeah, it's possible. Sure. We haven't seen anything to suggest that they can, but it's certainly possible. It's an outcome that could happen. It's not, you know, insurmountable. They're right now plus 260 on the money line here at Circa. So it's an uphill battle, but you know, it's not like they're plus, you know, a million. They have a legitimate shot to win this
game.
It's
a six and a half point game.
Yeah, if things go wrong, if there's an injury for UConn, if there's some foul trouble, things like that. I mean, if both teams go out and play a good game, UConn wins, no question.
Right.
But things can happen in one-game scenarios. Well, that's why one-game scenarios are more fun than series.
Here's the biggest thing, and I said every game that Zach Edey plays in, who are they going to match him up with? Because on defense, NC State tried to keep Big Fella away from him. Right, and DJ Burns had another dude defending him who was big, 6'10 and 260. He couldn't handle him. Is UConn going to mostly avoid having Klingon cover him because Zach Edey draws fouls? You could take Klingon completely out of the game.
Sure.
So you just avoid him, and then I mean, I always think with Purdue, it's pick your poison. The poison you take is Edey can go for 35. He can't get 20 rebounds, can't get 15 rebounds, but let him have his 35. You try, but you let him have it. And it's the guys on the perimeter.
Yeah, you can't focus all your attention on him and let them shoot threes.
Doubling down. There's some interesting things on the double, though, that I saw. So we'll get to that. Damon, you were asking, is there any way the men's championship game can match the women? I'll fire back at you. In what way?
Yeah. I think I mean when it comes to viewership and eyeballs.
No.
When it comes to the intrigue of people just wanting to talk about this game, because yesterday the takes were flying from every which direction. And especially with this late start time, I don't know if we're going to see that all collective group experience of watching this national championship game as we did with the women's.
No, it's a Monday night compared to a Sunday afternoon. It was kind of in the perfect time. So viewers, no chance. But, yeah, and I think, yeah, take-wise – yeah, for sure. It was about yesterday. Yesterday was a game just ripe for ridiculous takes and, you know, some decent conversations as well. But, yeah, there's almost no chance that this game could do that.
But if you're men's college basketball, wouldn't you want more of the Caitlin Clark effect than rather, hey, the two best teams made it to the national championship and it should be a good game? Because on paper, it sounds kind of boring. The two best teams made it and there's really...
That is crazy.
Yeah,
you've got Goliaths and centers. The two best teams made it, and that's not enough for you. So what we need, what men's basketball needs, is basically a future like top 25 NBA player of all time every year to match. And actually, I'm understating what Caitlin Clark is. I think Caitlin Clark will be a top five player of all time. I actually don't think it's that hard to become that in the WNBA, and I'll build that case as the show goes along, because there's already been pushback from some of the old slugs in the WNBA trying to talk a little trash, but also be honest at least to what they think. So yeah, but Adam's right. I don't think it's going to do. We get numbers today on this, because the Iowa UConn game did 14.2 million.
I'm sure it's more.
You think this is like 16 million?
Yeah, I'm sure it's more. It was Sunday compared to a Friday night. Absolutely.
All right.
People wanted to watch Caitlin Clark. If it would have been, but that's the thing. It's not. People are talking about women's basketball. It's Caitlin Clark.
I've got the numbers here.
If Caitlin Clark wasn't in that game, it would have done less than half of what it did.
18.7 million.
Wow. Okay.
Most watched that's women's a college number. Basketball game on record since 1992.
That is a monster number. So we are going to go with a theme that has been on my shows for at least 15 years. And Adam, what do I always say about? Be careful what you wish for. If you want coverage, you're going to get coverage. And I'm talking about men's basketball. Then you're going to get coverage like the men get. There's going to be negative stuff, positive stuff. There's going to be smart critiques on both sides. And I got a great example of this yesterday. I said a couple of days ago last week when Iowa beat LSU, one of your buddies who's a big Iowa fan, Ben, he sent something to me calling me a casual. And I said, whatever casual this or that, if you get by UConn, you are going to lose by at least 15 against South Carolina. I watch enough college basketball outside of one team to know that South Carolina was a dominant force. they lost by 12. So I sent back. I said, hey, you were right. They only lost by 12. I'm being a smartass. But I said, hey, great season, buddy. Right? He sends back. And this is the problem with, I think, well, this is regional thoughts. But I also think it's because they're tied to the women's game. Your buddy said, congrats on being a troll and hating women's basketball. I'm like, I was talking about South Carolina as being a great team.
Yeah.
He said, hope you enjoy bringing the game down instead of trying to bring it up. No, I'm not bringing Iowa down or bringing Caitlin Clark down. And I also responded to him, give me a show anywhere in the country in a top 35 market like Vegas is, an afternoon drive show that spends more time talking about women's basketball than we do. And it is positive and it is negative. You get the same coverage you get with the men. That is absurd. But if you want to be a baby about it, and this is overall for women's college basketball fans, everyone who has a critique of a women's basketball team or a women's basketball player is not a troll and isn't trying to take the women's game down. I'm trying to bring it up! We're talking about it! We can just ignore it and laugh at it! We don't do that. See, this guy right here, and I will do a little backslapping, 35 years ago, I was doing play-by-play of women's basketball. So please do not do that. And for everyone out there listening, when you hear harsh criticisms of women's basketball, we are doing the same thing we do to the men. That's good for you guys.
Yeah. And I also thought, look, I call it, I think it's pretty close to disrespectful how most people have treated this college basketball season for women. Yeah. It's Caitlin Clark is great. Caitlin Clark is great. Caitlin Clark is great. She's not on the best team. So if you want to lift women's basketball, lift South Carolina, the best team with the best coach, not the player that you've fallen in love with and decided that you liked because she shoots a bunch of threes or whatever. Like the team, the sport,
by the way,
game.
You hear what I'm saying, right? Did you not hear what I said 5 minutes ago? I believe Caitlin Clark will go into the WNBA and kill them. That's an awesome storyline. So how I'm just telling you, like you just said, South Carolina was the best team. I got it right. Did you bet it in game? You love to bet the best team in game, right?
Yeah,
when they fall behind, it was 29. I could not get to my phone quick enough, and I'm like, even money? Okay.
Yeah,
and then within whatever, 35 minutes of real time, they're up at the half, and they cruised down the stretch.
Yeah, I bet them pregame and in game.
Exactly. Why bring the game down, brother?
Because they're the best team.
What's wrong with you? Oh, you're not emotional. That's what it is. On the way back, we'll continue on the Caitlin Clark story because I think it's great. I think the stuff off the court is great. But I called this months ago, and I reiterated it on local TV last week. I'll play the bite for you, but you watch, man. The WNBA players, there's going to be an undercurrent, and it may come up in front of people where they're like, oh, this is insulting that they're saying she's so good. This is insulting.
And I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. She carried a heavy load for our sport, and it just is not going to stop here on a collegiate tour. But when she is the number one pick in a WNBA draft, she's gonna lift that league up as well. So Caitlin Clark, if you're out there, you are one of the GOATs of our games, and we appreciate you.
Hanging out at Stadium Swim, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I thought that was awesome. Dawn Staley, national champion, taking a little bit of the shine off her team for a few seconds and pointed out something really accurate there. I'm not saying it happened in the game, but I could see it during quarter breaks and when she was interviewed or pregame or postgame. Caitlin Clark did carry a lot. And everyone in women's basketball, they don't have to be like overly positive, but they should all be thanking what Caitlin Clark did for the women's game. And the WNBA players absolutely should be embracing her and thanking her for what's coming. So good for Dawn Staley.
I would fight back that she carried a lot. I never saw a negative word said. Never. Not once. When she's chucking bad shots, which I know she's made a lot of them throughout her career. When in tough situations where it's 2 seconds into the shot clock and she's chucking a 40-footer in a game where they're down like 8 points, she's got to try to do it. And maybe that's fair. But no matter what she did all season long, and I'm not just talking about yesterday, that was a game where she was trying to rally her team after having a great start and then getting shut down, all throughout the year. No matter what she did, it was always positive. And so, not that she did anything off the court or even on the court to deserve, to be ripped or anything like that, but it's not LeBron, right? Where like LeBron as much as positive attention as he got just as much negative. No matter what he did, it was negative. It was scrutinized. It was crushing him. I never saw negativity toward her.
I saw negativity, but it's not certainly not 50-50. So you're right on that. Might be 90-10.
Yeah, and I also don't know, because I know some of the negativity that you're referring to, but I will absolutely fight back on whether it was negativity toward her.
I knew you would. Let's listen to Diana Taurasi, who was on with SVP before the title game when she was asked about Caitlin Clark and the WNBA.
Reality is coming. There's levels to this thing, and that's just life. We all went through it. You look superhuman playing against 18-year-olds, but you're going to come with some grown women that have been playing professional basketball for a long time.
Okay, so that's what Diana Taurasi should be doing. That's her job. I will say the job that she and Sue Bird do is borderline awful. It is so boring. There were place after place yesterday that I went to where they didn't realize the game was on ABC, and so they put that feed on, and I got to listen to a little bit of it. It was so boring. So maybe she does need stuff like that. Now, is she saying that because it's her job or because there's some jealousy or it's competitiveness? I will say this. I think the elder statesman of the WNBA better be real careful, because I've talked about the evolution of the game. To me, Diana Taurasi's been in the WNBA for 17 years, 16 years. To me, this is the equivalent of a really good player in 1966 trying to crap on, I'm talking men's side, this isn't like a 90s male. This is a 1966 male player trying to crap on the game today. I don't think they realize how much progress has been made and what's coming at them with the new breed of players.
Well, first of all,
and on top of that, there's already a promotion being run. I think it's like the GOAT versus the Rook. There was already some imagery coming out from the Mercury about their game against Indiana. Diana Taurasi, in however, I'm not saying you got to play her the whole game, but whatever minute she plays, you better effing cover Caitlin Clark the entire GDAM game.
So,
because Caitlin Clark is not a 34% shooter from three as Diana Taurasi is. Man, I wish I watched, paid attention to the game and knew anything. Is not a 34% shooter in the women's game. This is a 46% shooter who I think will do the same thing in the WNBA. And I will lay it down again.
I'll take that bet.
We're going to have a bunch of bets. What it reminds me of, and I think Taurasi is just the front end of this, because I started seeing it a little bit with the Aces last year about, you know, talking about the Rooks who are going to be coming, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. I think we're going to have a little bit of a Tiger effect here, where too many WNBA players are going to be like, our game's good. She's not going to rise it up that much. Sort of like Fuzzy Zeller not getting it. Well, one, he was a racist. But two, Fuzzy Zeller being all anti-Tiger Woods and was like, hey, J.O., do you realize what this guy's going to do to the game? And can anyone challenge me on how much Tiger Woods grew the game for him and everyone else?
Yeah.
This is last week on Fox 5. I'm always ahead of you guys, so take a listen to this.
I think Caitlin Clark goes into the WNBA. She's the biggest star the league has, and I think she's also going to kill it. There are already whispers around the WNBA like, oh, it's going to take her time to adjust. I think she goes in, averages 25 points a game. I think she's going to be awesome and the biggest star. Almost, you know what I'm going to compare it to? Almost like when Tiger Woods came out on the scene in golf and there were older guys who were like, who's this guy? Why is he getting all the attention? Dummies, this helps you. It's going to raise the whole game.
Right.
And look how much more money golfers made the last 30 years
exactly.
because of Tiger
no.
Woods. But I think there will be some resistance, which is a good thing. You should have a competitive nature to fight back on, if you're a WNBA player, people telling you that this rookie's going to come in and dominate.
No, I'm the biggest star, no doubt, but we might have to make a friendly wager. I'm taking under 25
okay.
points per game or rookie season.
Right.
There you go, Case Kiefer in full beta style. He's actually an alpha on TV. He's one of the stars of that show on Silver State Sports and Entertainment Network. All right, fire away.
So, a lot of things. First of all, I'll take the under 25 points and under 46% from three in her first season in the WNBA for sure. People are making this about Caitlin Clark. The old heads are coming at Caitlin Clark because she's too popular. And I'll also disagree on the Sue Bird show, which I think is fantastic, and you can call it the Sue Bird Diana Taurasi. It's the Sue Bird show. She's a star. But when they were discussing, and I watched the uncensored one where they were just going off, and they were like, these rookies, they think they're hot, and they come in this league, and we effing, and it was just curse after curse after curse after curse. And I was like, man, People are right. They really hate Caitlin Clark. This is crazy. And then I realized, oh, no, wait. They're talking about Sabrina Ionescu. Like, this is not a Caitlin Clark thing. People are making this, oh, they hate Caitlin Clark. This has been a long time thing when people are talking about how hard it is to transition from being the biggest superstar ever in college to trying to come in the NBA. And I look back and it was the same was said about Kelsey Plum. And guess what? It was right about Kelsey Plum. And it was right about Sabrina Ionescu. Like, it is a hard adjustment. It's a hard thing to do. And there has been resistance from players forever to these big superstars and colleges coming in and dominating, and they've been right time after time after time. Now, I do think Caitlin Clark is going to have a pretty good rookie season, just like Sabrina Ionescu did. But Sabrina Ionescu, when people said she's going to come in and she's going to average 30 a game and be the MVP in the rookie year, no, she's not. And no, Caitlin Clark isn't either. It's a fun story. It's good for everybody. It's good that people are getting involved and watching. I don't like that I know for sure that if Caitlin Clark was in the game yesterday and we had the best team in college basketball, the one that people should be watching, that people wouldn't have tuned in at that level. They're tuning in to watch her, which sucks. It sucks. You should appreciate the game, not a player that you like. But that's the reality. She is helping, but it is going to be a very tough adjustment for her.
Hanging out at Stadium Swim, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Rolling on here, Circa Las Vegas Stadium Swim is the site as they wrap up their mania under the sun. Been doing it for 3 weeks. Big viewing party out here for the men's national title game. Damon is back in our Finley Toyota studios. We take a break for a second from the women's basketball stuff and the men's title game. Adam, we got an interesting question last night. By the way, was this weekend at some point the anniversary of Jim Everett and Jim Rome?
I believe it was. Okay. April 6th?
Do you believe commemorating the anniversary is anything significant?
No.
Okay, why?
It was fake.
Yes. We both believe it was a bit. So why commemorate it as like some crazy, unpredictable moment of sports talk TV and radio when I think it was set up beforehand?
I mean, I guess it was a turning point for like ESPN2 to survive in some way.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that was significant. And it probably did launch Jim Rome to another stratosphere. So it worked because people believed it was real. And it's kind of something that I think a lot of fans wish for.
It probably launched like a show like Impractical Jokers, too.
Okay.
That's good.
Like I said, it's probably a wish of many viewers that an athlete would jump the table and beat the crap out of him, you know, try to. Because if you notice, he could have easily gotten access to Rome and kept holding back. Yeah. I also don't think Jim Everett would ever let himself snap that much.
No.
It's kind of a...
Over something so silly?
Yeah, even keeled guy over being called Chris Everett. Yeah. So I think it was a setup. But anyway, someone had asked us, what's the most Cofield and Company-like moment where that happened? Was it the Mike Tyson interview?
That wasn't us.
Right.
I did see the War Machine interview reference, too, which that was rough.
Well, you weren't there for that.
Yeah, but I've seen it.
Here's the thing. Let me explain something. That was Mitch Paul and Seed, right?
Yeah.
So what happened out of that interview, if people don't remember, Mike Tyson came in. I don't know if he was whacked on something or, you know, he was one of those moments where, what'd he do with Lennox Lewis where he's talking about eating his children? He just went overboard and basically suggested that he'd like to sodomize Sarah Palin.
Yes.
So there were some people locally who got all pissed off. It went all the way up the chain to ESPN National. They called our management at the station and wanted everyone fired from the show, but our station has a major sack and they back talent. So they calmed him down. But the problem with that whole interview, and I don't think we've ever talked about it, Seed was tight with Tyson to the point, I think, was that the moment where he was actually on their payroll a little bit?
Yeah,
doing that, doing the Tyson show.
Yeah.
So he wasn't going to end the interview. I also don't know that he got what he was saying about Sarah Palin in the first place. And, I mean, the other two guys are kind of young in their radio career, so I don't think they'd be willing to stand up to Tyson. Now, am I going to stand up? If that was our show, am I going to stand up and start fighting Mike Tyson? No. But I'm going to break, and I'm going to politely say, we're done. You can leave. And anyone out there who doesn't think I would do that, can we reference Tim Sylvia?
Yeah, I was going to say Tim Sylvia would be the one on our show, I think.
Well, but it never got to that because Tim Sylvia told the sports big, I'm going to reach across and punch you. And Tim Sylvia is the former heavyweight champ of the UFC, 6'8", 265. And without hesitation, I looked at him and I'm like, you're not going to do that. Stop. Cut it out. And I said it to him again and he calmed down. And we've had a few other moments like that where it was like, stop. Okay?
Sure.
So that was not our show. The War Machine interview, and he, what's his real name? Copenhaver, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, eventually he's in jail forever. Because he nearly murdered his girlfriend of the time, or ex, or whatever was going on. When he came with us, it was whatever, 3 years before, and he talked about killing himself, but he did it in like a subtle way where he's just like, oh, if this fighting thing doesn't work out and I'm not where I want to be at like 34, I'm just done.
Yeah.
And then Koken kind of freaked out and he's like, what does that mean? You know? But he never lunged at us. He never tried to attack us.
No.
I didn't feel threatened at all. So I thought we had a couple of moments at the Final Four that were a little awkward. We have awkward moments every once in a while.
Sure. Just by nature.
What was the most awkward moment in Phoenix for you?
I feel like it was watching you.
With what?
Your dentistry comment.
Oh, that was a good one, but that happens. Yeah, I threw out that to a kid at UC Davis that I thought it was a good dental school. Or is that why he stayed around for 4 years? And then he said dentistry is not a big thing at UC Davis. So I was wrong. That wasn't that bad. I personally thought it was you mocking on the Vermont coach for starting off his career like 6-46.
Oh, he liked that.
And then he actually came back and said, yeah, I was coaching at a school for the deaf and hard of hearing. And then you just kept piling on him. So I thought that was weird. We also had some weird exchanges away from the show, right? By the way, Damon, I was blessed to be allowed into a Marriott lounge.
That's true.
Which apparently Arash, and we already knew Adam's the king of the hill that way. So I got in, and then what happened in the lounge?
Well, we saw somebody introduce themselves to a coach. Because I also was going to say, me saying hi and like nodding to a coach to come over to us that absolutely we know. And him just walking up by and ignoring us. That was
really
rough. That was rough.
Oh, yeah. You were really mad about that one.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous.
Yes.
But, yeah, I think watching somebody – I don't want to say who the coach was, but I will say
– I'm 100% going to say who it was.
The wife of a very prominent former coach and broadcaster introduced herself to a prominent former head coach of college basketball and said, oh, I'm blankety blank, wife of blank. And the head coach was like, rah. I'm not saying he blew her off. He was like, shook her hand reluctantly and just like kind of walked away.
And he guesses to who it is. Come on. He's someone I talk about all the time on the show as being an absolute hypocrite when it comes to buying basketball players.
Former coach.
No, I can't, Steve. Give me the name. I really want to know, though.
It was Jim Boeheim.
Oh!
And the thing is, and you know, my point with my point earlier with Sean, who sent in the thing about Tyson, I said to him, I'm like, we generally don't invite people on that we're going to have to throw off the show. Now, that may make for good radio, but I'm like, I don't have the patience for it anymore. But Adam, I don't think you were around. Boeheim was offered to us in the morning on Thursday morning. And some radio dude in Raleigh, who, of course, went to Syracuse, like all of them have, was like, absolutely, we want Jim Boeheim on. And I paused for a second. I'm like, absolutely not. No, thank you. So
We'll pass.
Hard pass. So and you, what do you think in the lounge when you said he almost bumped my chair and I couldn't see him? Like, am I going to get up and start fighting 76-year-old Jim Boeheim?
No, I just thought he was just walking towards you, and he was going to be walking very close, passing by very closely.
Watch yourself.
And I was just expecting.
Watch yourself.
No, not that there was going to be an actual, like, bump or confrontation.
Yeah.
Just I was waiting for you to just do one of those things where, you know, you turn your head at some point and notice, like, somebody's right in your periphery.
Yeah.
I just thought it'd be funny if you just turned your head and all of a sudden it's Jim Boeheim standing right there in front of you.
I'll give you another one. Damon, we talked to Jared Calhoun. We're going to put out the conversation later in the week. But he's the new head coach at Utah State, and he mentioned something about Raleigh Massimino at UNLV, and I kind of grunted. I'm like, we don't talk about him. And little did I realize, because I hadn't had a chance to look up all of Jared Calhoun's background, that he was a Massimino guy.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to go off on him. So I'm sure he kind of, it was in the interview, he pivoted real quick, but I'm sure he was like, what's with this guy?
Oh, especially because me and him had been talking before the interview started.
Right.
And we were talking all about Raleigh and Cleveland State and all that stuff. So I think you just tuned it out.
I did.
We weren't paying attention.
I did.
So we had already had this whole conversation off the air.
Man, Adam crossed the picket line, as we explained. He's anti-union. He did that on the streets. And then I think one of the more awkward moments was both of us trying to talk to the Phoenix mayor in an interview.
Well, I would say it's her fault, not ours.
That was rough, man. It's you have these examples, Damon, where you get a politician trying to talk sports. She was so nervous.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was going to say it's hard when the interviewers crap on you from the start.
Well,
we didn't.
She had handlers. We kind of did. We did sort of set her up to defend Phoenix against us, and she just never recovered. And then she's got her handlers because they're all about PR and not having embarrassing moments. And I think she was already nervous having to talk sports.
Yeah.
So it was unbearable. And you're right. Maybe it was our fault.
You would think though that would get you like ready.
Yep.
Like, oh, you're going to go after us? All right, let's go. But it was just terrified response after terrified response.
Let's be honest. In the public eye, most politicians, what do you think, Adam? Safely. Like 80 to 85% really can't speak to people.
Oh, yeah.
They've created a character to get elected, and they can't speak to people. And nice lady.
Yeah.
But, boy, that was uneasy.
Yeah, I thought she was really nice before we started the interview.
I thought the Houston mayor years ago was great, and you didn't like him either.
Well, I thought he had some strange answers. No, he was fine. I mean, he was fine.
It was better than what we talked.
Far better.
Yes, very, very much so. On the way back, let's turn our attention to a path to the draft. We'll get into the Patriots as they get ready for the draft.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Fair. On Adam Hill, Steve Cofield here at Circa Las Vegas, watching some baseball, getting ready for the national title game, the mania under the sun, their NCAA tournament coverage week by week. Viewing parties finishes up tonight with the national title game. Let's get into what's going on in the NFL draft. We've just started to hit on teams a couple weeks out with the draft preview and from Locked On Patriots podcast, Mike DeBate. Joined Steve and Adam here in Vegas. How are you, sir?
Good, thanks, Steve. Adam, thanks so much for having me on today.
Oh, thanks for coming on with us again. So let's talk about the overall narrative here of, I don't know, 98% of people thinking that the Patriots are guaranteed to draft a quarterback. Is that what you're feeling?
Yeah, I think that's the prevailing feeling right now throughout Foxborough. I think, you know, as much as people may want to push the narrative that the Patriots may be willing to trade down, I still think it's a possibility. I wouldn't completely take that off the table, but I would say that 90% or higher right now feeling that the Pats are going to go with a quarterback at number three is probably the direction they're heading in. All signs seem to be pointing to that by what we're hearing from Foxborough and the moves that they've made in free agency so far with the opening of the new NFL year. All those signs seem to point to nurturing a young quarterback and trying to bring the team back to respectability in that way.
What options do they have if they don't go there? I mean, is it just go with the veteran and hope that they can build in the future, or is it hope that one of the lower guys turns out? I mean, where are they thinking?
Well, I think the only way that they wouldn't go with a quarterback here is if they felt that one of the guys that they were willing to select with this pick, either Jaden Daniels or Drake May, or I know there's a dark horse push now for someone like a J.J. McCarthy, if they felt that none of these guys could be their quarterback of the future and they're not sold on them, then the Patriots might look at the draft board and say, okay, well, if there are quarterback needy teams that are ready to take that step that we're not ready to take in 2024, maybe we can maximize the draft capital, get a couple of first rounders, go after a solid left tackle to provide protection, maybe go after a wide receiver, kind of run it back with what you've got at quarterback this year and see maybe if you're in position to draft a franchise quarterback next year. Again, I don't think that's the direction they're going in. I think they look at either Daniels or May especially as guys that they can build their franchise around. That's ultimately why I think they're going to go with this pick. You're kind of right in your assessment when you say that. I don't think there are too many directions that the Patriots can go in right now for a rebuild other than getting the quarterback in place and then letting those pieces fall as they may.
Do you get a sense there's a chance they could wait? And is there one of those guys that they love far more than the other that if they're the ones that are turned down at number two, then they go ahead and make the pick, and if not, then they trade out? Like, do you think there's that much of a difference between those two players in their mind?
From what I'm hearing, I really don't believe so. I think they're sold on someone like a Jaden Daniels or a Drake May. Now, obviously, they're two different players. Drake May is someone that is more of a pocket passer, but someone that can scramble, get outside, make things happen, an electric type of player that sometimes goes a little bit too over the top when it comes to searching out the big play. But he's someone that definitely has the arm, can make the throws all over the field, and the Patriots feel there's tremendous upside there. On the flip side, they haven't had a dynamic quarterback like Jaden Daniels, a true threat capable quarterback that can, make plays happen on the ground and also facilitate plays through the air. They had a little bit of that in Cam Newton in 2020, but it wasn't enough of a sample size. Mac Jones came in and the Patriots, went back to the typical pocket quarterback, pocket passer that Josh McDaniels was used to coordinating at that time. I think they look at both of these guys as players they could build around. Obviously, the supporting cast that they're going to put in terms of offense, especially at receiver, and maybe even as a pass-catching back out of the running back position, is going to be determined by who they pick. So I think they're willing to go and willing to take the risk that either May or Daniels will be off the board at two with the Washington Commanders, and I think they're ready to go with whoever is left over at that point.
So I guess one of the questions about which direction they do go would be, how much of a leash is Mayo going to have? I mean, are they committed to, hey, this is going to be a while, it's going to be a couple of tough years, or does he have to show something early in order to keep this job long term?
I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think he's on a one-year leash. I think that Gerard Mayo has an awful lot of support in the owner's box when it comes to Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft and the Patriots' brain trust right now. He's got a very close, good working relationship with Elliott Wolf, who is the de facto GM at this point. His official title is Director of Scouting. I expect that to change after the draft, and I expect him to be installed as either Director of Player Personnel or General Manager. So at that point, you're going to give Mayo at least a couple of years to get this going and to get this up off the ground. But the expectations in New England have changed from where they were 25 years ago, which was the last time they made a head coaching change. This team has tasted a lot of experience and a lot of victory since then. So they're not going to be as willing to take a back seat and let this thing build for multiple years. If you don't see things happen within a 2 to 3 year period, yeah, I think the seat could get hot and Gerard Mayo. But at the same time, there also will be at least a little bit of an opportunity for him to build. I think he's safe through this year, and I do believe, without any hesitation, he'll be back in 2025. Regardless of what this year shakes out for the New England Patriots, I think they realize they still have a long way to go.
Talking Patriots, setting up for the draft in a couple of weeks and what they're going to do at the top of the draft with the third pick. We'll get into more of the picks and more depth and positions. I don't want to say I'm shocked that there's still expectations, because I get it with sports fans. But the average fan there has to realize that the Patriots probably have a bottom three roster. And you tell me, it sounded like Patriots management was a little surprised by what happened in free agency and that people weren't running to come to the franchise.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of both. I think a lot of that comes from just the Patriots being a destination that a lot of people wanted to play for. Players would take less money to come and play with Tom Brady, or some would take less money to say, I want to be coached by Bill Belichick. They don't have either luxury on that level anymore. And you're absolutely right. This is a team that is probably, I would say, bottom five. I don't necessarily know bottom three, although I think the argument can be made. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm going to look at a little bit more optimism there, but this is not a roster that is going to contend for a playoff spot this year. So Patriots fans have to be realistic. They have to be temperate in their approach and in their expectations of what this team can do on the field. I think in the owner's box and I think in the front office, they understand where they are right now. So I think it's about building that tradition, building that foundation to try to keep up with, where teams have been in the past in their circumstances that have been able to rebuild and possibly even rebuild quickly. There is talent on that Patriots roster. There's no question about it. It needs to be brought together with the right coaching, the right attitude, players being on the same page, and also getting, obviously, positions of need, key positions of need filled the most of which is quarterback. But I would say a very close second is finding a left tackle to be able to protect the quarterback's blind side. Patriots were deficient in both of those areas last year. They need to upgrade, and they need to upgrade in a big way if they're going to hope to build on what was a 4-13 season just 1 year ago.
And it feels like they've kind of been rebuilding for a couple years, even if they've been all into it. But is there a sense that this is maybe a right time to be doing it with, you know, you expect Buffalo's window to not be much bigger. Miami probably doesn't have that long of a window right now. They'll probably be good for the next couple of years. And the Jets, probably one season that they have to compete right now. So this might be a good time for the Patriots to just say, okay, this is our time to get better. And then when those teams start kind of coming down, we'll be on the rise.
Absolutely. And I think that's very well said. You look at Miami's window, probably their competition, their stiffest competition for the next few years, because you do have some young players like a Jalen Waddle, obviously like a Tua Tagovailoa, that can be re-signed, brought back, and you can continue to contend. Buffalo, I think it's obvious right now that their window is closing. Unless they upgrade their wide receiver position and they do it through the draft, or someone that can take the pressure off and be a solid number one or 1A to Curtis Samuel now without Stephon Diggs there, yeah, that's a team that is facing contend now or maybe not contend ever. And the Jets are obviously all in for this year. I mean, they've had a very good offseason. They've upgraded all of the positions of need. If they go out and get a bona fide wide receiver at number 10 in the draft for Aaron Rodgers, that definitely puts them in the driver's seat right now to be the biggest climber in that division. Patriots are not at that level yet. If they do lie low for the next couple of years, though, their gap between those three teams ahead of them is absolutely going to close. So at that point, yeah, I think the Patriots are looking at this opportunity and this time period as being the best to regroup, restock the shelves, and then try to build from there.
Mike, we appreciate a couple minutes, especially on short notice. Thank you so much.
Oh, anytime, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on today.
Lockdown Patriots podcast. Mike DeBate with us. Let's do a giveaway right now. 364-1100, caller 7. Two tickets, Margarita World at the Downtown Event Center featuring the Coral Reefer Band. Day of live music and margaritas. Saturday, April 20th, 5 p.m. Everything starts up. You can get your tickets at dlvec.com, dlvec.com. Margarita World at the Downtown Las Vegas Event Center. Two tickets right now with DeMond. 364-1100, caller 7.